Your mother heard a piece on WKMS about Vic Mazzone, a young man from Paducah, who is singing with the Silver Lake Chorus in Los Angeles. And, you know, he's a fellow who has made his way in the arts successfully, and you have too. You began as an unschooler, went to Stevens College, earned your theater degree. Now I gather you've earned your MS degree in a discipline called Orientation and Mobility for the Blind. Yep. So you're completely self-motivated and now being hailed as a wunderkind of the Philadelphia Fringe Festival. Where do we begin?
Oh, gosh. I don't know. I mean, I certainly wear a lot of different hats. Yeah, the Fringe Festival has really been a great catapult into the theater scene here in Philadelphia for me, for sure.
So as you've been working on your degrees, you've been creating works that have created quite a stir. And I was gratified to see that you reached a Kickstarter goal in fundraising for your latest work. Is it Imanami?
Imanami, yeah, like tsunami. Yeah, we actually, my group Puppet Tyranny, we did two Kickstarters this year, which I was really nervous about doing because I didn't think anyone would pay attention to the second one. But we did a Kickstarter in the spring for a tour that we did. And then when I got back, I did another one for Imanami to help raise the funds for that, which both of them, thankfully, met their goals, which allowed us to do the tour and fund the show, which was great.
Now tell me about Puppet Tyranny.
It's a group of three of us now. It was originally four. We're kind of more of a multimedia group than a puppet group, I guess. We have one member who really concentrates on doing animations and video work, and he also helps craft puppets. And I'm the quote-unquote real actress of the group, since I'm the only one who actually went to school for it. And I also make puppets, and the other guy, Zach, and I, we kind of take turns directing, writing, and producing shows for the group. And then John is our other member, and he also acts and kind of helps with the creative process. So, yeah, it's a fun group. We've been together for 2 or 3 years now, I think. And we've done, oh gosh, I don't even know how many shows we've done now. 1, 2, 3, 4, at least like 5 or 6 shows at this point, which is pretty good output. And I'm pretty proud of all the stuff we've done.
It looks to me in all of your publicity online that your stuff is fantastic and humorous and visual. But that's just me thinking about it. You describe your work.
Well, thanks, first off. Yeah, I try to write shows that, I generally produce my own work because I write shows that really are pretty out of the mainstream, but that people still really find enjoyable. All three of the shows that I've produced myself kind of focus on genres that I really enjoy. The first one was kind of a spoof on noir, and the second one was about my all-time favorite animal in the world, water bears. And the third one was kind of a collaborative effort between me and my partner, Jeremy, who writes music. And I kind of based a whole show off of a concept that he'd come up with for an album of his and kind of went from there. But I try to incorporate a lot of different media in all of them. We do a lot of found object puppetry, like making puppets out of brooms and bowling pins, as well as putting animation and video work in every show. In the last show, we added aerial silks, which is something that I got interested in a few years ago. So we try to just throw a lot of different cool stuff in there and try to make it all work with a really fantastical, crazy storyline, too. So it always ends up being a real fun project. And because we include so many different media aspects, we usually end up working with a lot of different cool people around town, which is really fun.
It sounds like there is a cadre of creativity connected with the Philly Fringe Project. You're also in the group Upholstery. Is that the group you share with Jeremy?
Yeah, I'm like a weird side member of Upholstery. It's really his band, and they're kind of just a, I don't want to say traditional, but they're like a rock band. But then I do this little side project with them called Senior Papos, which is a drag show. And I dress up like a really old Spanish man, and Jeremy dresses up like my young niece. And we have this funny little drag routine worked out where I sing songs in Spanish that we wrote, and he translates them, and we have this whole telenovela love affair thing going on throughout the whole thing. So not like a member of Upholstery, but I have a weird side project with it, which is always fun.
And that seems to coincide with your passion for learning languages. I listened to your piece on YouTube in response to a television piece on unschooled children.
Oh, yeah.
So I'm aware that you are assiduously learning Spanish at this point.
Yeah, I mean, actually, I'm pretty fluent in Spanish at this point, and I actually just started working on Italian because I really want to go to Italy next year, and I got kind of winter cabin fever, I guess, and was like, I need to do something, so I started learning Italian like 2 weeks ago, so we'll see how far I get with it, but yeah, I'm very interested in that, and we both wrote the Spanish songs when we were in Spain as kind of a way to work on our language skills and learn new words. So it's a really good project for that.
Now, you are a person who earned a 26 on your ACT at age 14. You were allowed to pursue the studies that interested you and the friends who interested you when you were growing up, and you are a self-professed lifelong learner. You are demonstrating a lot of imagination. I'm wondering if there are dreams that you can articulate of what other things you really want to achieve.
Well, right now I have a lot of small goals set out for the next few years, and it's kind of hard to look past those at times. But overall, I want to keep building up my career, writing and directing and doing puppet work. It'd be great someday to have my work produced outside of Philadelphia and start being able to really write for a living. That would be really great. So that kind of requires me to make things a little bit more commercial, which I'm a little loath to do at this point, but I'm definitely considering it. I also want to move abroad at some point, which I'm really keen to do. I think it'll really help improve my language skills. Just keep creating as much as I can.
You say that your parents were your, what did you say? Your chauffeurs and your librarians.
I'm very good ones at that.
Now, I know your mom's name is Leslie McGalkin. Am I saying it correctly?
Yeah, McCaughan.
And your dad is?
George Kennedy.
And what do they do now?
My mom is a speech-language pathologist. She works with people of all ages. I think she works mostly with kids now. She's kind of moved around from different places during her work. She works with kids and adults that have difficulty with speech. And my dad, I don't know what his exact title is now, but he basically helps run an adult foster care program where he helps people with disabilities find homes in the community and then ensures that they're safe and well cared for and looks after their well-being. So that's what they do.
Have you caught a lot of flack over the years because you've been homeschooled or unschooled?
I got a lot more when I was younger, definitely. And since I put myself out there and made a bunch of YouTube videos about it, I've got a bunch of interesting YouTube comments, which I try not to take too seriously most of the time. And that's really where most of it's come from, because most people in my day-to-day life don't even really know about it or think about it. And if I mentioned it, it's just kind of like a weird interesting fact. But when I was younger, I had people coming up to me all the time saying, oh, do you know what 2 + 2 is? And, you know, silly stuff like that. But in, like, going to school, I never had any problems. When I went to get my master's, I was told by all the teachers there that they actually really enjoy getting homeschoolers because they tend to be more self-motivated than kids that were in public school. So, yeah, it was a good thing for me, definitely. It definitely worked out in my favor.
Interesting how you found the sciences to be consuming you, I guess, at this point.
Oh, yeah, and that's so funny because people always say that about homeschooling, like, oh, well, then you're never going to learn any science. And I definitely wasn't big into science when I was younger, but I'm so fascinated by it now. And two of my plays, my most recent ones, both deal with scientific stuff because I'm just so fascinated with it. And my boyfriend was a chemistry major, so I'm always going to him being like, hey, you're a scientist. Tell me about some science things. He tries to, like, teach me some chemistry stuff, which is pretty cool.
So what are water bears in space?
Water bear is the colloquial name for a tardigrade. And tardigrade is a tiny little microscopic animal that lives in moss. And it's the strongest animal on the planet, meaning it can survive being boiled, being frozen, 6 times the pressure of the deepest ocean depth, 5,000 times the radiation that a human can withstand, and it's the only animal that can survive in outer space. And they did that experiment in 2009, which was, I think, 2 years before I wrote the play about them. They can live 120 years without water. They're like really weird little cool insects. And I felt they needed their own play so that the masses could learn about them.
In the play, do you present them with greater challenges than you've already described?
Oh, yeah. You know, that actually would have been a good idea. No, I didn't. The whole play was supposed to be kind of a riff on a fantasy movie or fantasy novel. Mm-hmm. So there were, you know, the typical trio of water bears, the brave leader, the girl, and the clumsy little kid, and they go off on an adventure to save their homeland, but end up being kidnapped and sent to outer space and chased by a giant cannibal tardigrade around a spaceship. But, of course, they have no idea what's going on. And then there's, like, a sub-side plot going on with a mad scientist who's trying to ruin the experiment and her former lab assistant, who's now her boss, trying to get the funding to get these animals into space. So that's a great idea, trying to, like, find something that a tardigrade couldn't do.
How did you visualize this creature?
Well, I looked at a lot of pictures of them. I mean, there's lots of electron scans of them that you can look at. And I sat down with Zach, who's in puppeteering, and we really, like, focused in on some of the features we thought were the funniest on them. Like, they have these weird, we just kept calling them nipple faces because they just look like they have a big nipple on their face. And so we made those into their, like, big nose. And then we just focused on the characterization and tried to make their face fit that. And then for their bodies, they have these, like, really, they have segmented bodies with 8 legs, and they're really, like, wiggly and bendy. So we had to make a couple different prototypes for the bodies of them, but ended up with, it looked just like dryer vent hose, but it was just like pieces, tubes of plastic with fabric covering them, kind of like an accordion, so that they could shrink up and expand and bend and be really flexible.
You sound like you have a lot of fun. After Imanami, what's next?
Well, we're trying to do another tour this spring. We might be remounting one of my first show is Rails, which is the noir show, because it's kind of the most compact and easily tourable. And then this fall, we're trying to get the rights to do Reservoir Dogs, the Quentin Tarantino film, mm-hmm. and do it with half puppets, half people in a garage, starting in a diner, and having it be kind of a choose-your-own-adventure thing where people follow the actors around on their various escapades. So we've got to work on actually getting the rights to do that, but we're keeping our fingers crossed.
Well, are you fascinated with dealing with this kind of show business fantasy life on one side and a very practical life on the other side, doing your mobility and orientation work? And also, I understand you're a standard patient, although I don't really understand what that is.
Yeah, standardized patient. The easiest way I've ever found to explain it to someone is, if you've ever seen Seinfeld, there's an episode where Kramer has to pretend he has gonorrhea. That's my job. I have to sit around in a doctor's office and pretend I have various illnesses. It's for the United States medical licensing exam. So it's a standardized test. I'm basically a question on your SAT, and the doctors come in and interview me.
What a great way to combine acting and science.
Yeah, it's great. It's a super, super fun, super interesting job. Yeah, but I love balancing doing art and having, quote-unquote, real jobs, because it gives me flexibility and stability at the same time. I don't have a full-time job where I can't take off for 2 months at a time. But I'm able to support myself financially and support the projects that I want to do, which is awesome.